You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The government announced a number of measures earlier this morning aimed at helping first home buyers to take a step onto the property ladder. Some of the measures include increasing the income cap to access first home grants and loans from $85,000 to $95,000 for single buyers and from $130,000 to $150,000 for two or more buyers. This measure would begin on April 1st alongside an increase to a number of regional price caps which exist for accessing support such as a first home loan. The rules regarding who can get a 5% deposit will also be expanded. The Brightline test has been extended from 5 years to 10, and $3.8 billion has been put towards accelerating the housing supply in the short to medium term. I spoke to Jared Kerr, the chief economist at KiwiBank, about what impact the government expects these initiatives will have and what they will do to the market in practice. Here is Jared. Some of the changes announced by the government today include lifting income caps for first home grants and loans, lifting regional price caps, and extending the Brightline test. Could you firstly explain what difference the government expects these to make?
Well, in terms of lifting the caps, it's basically just trying to catch up with the market. And as most of your listeners will know, the housing market's been on a tear for a year, and we're likely to see house prices rise, 30% in the year ahead, which is quite an incredible pace. So a lot of these adjustments are just trying to catch up to a housing market which is becoming increasingly unaffordable for first-time buyers.
Now, during the announcement today, Grant Robertson said that throughout 2020 there was advice that house prices would fall due to COVID-19, but as you've said, this hasn't happened and it's likely to increase even further. Why do you think this is the case, and do you think that these changes are actually going to have any impact on stunting the market in any way?
I think the changes will have an impact. We've seen some quite drastic changes on the investor community. So that, the investor side really has been hit hard with a number of these changes. So yes, I think the appreciation in house prices from here will be less than would have otherwise been the case. What the government has done is spent more time trying to tackle demand, but the actual problem with the housing market is a chronic shortage of supply, and much more needs to be done to boost supply than restrain demand. And that's the only way we're going to fix this housing market for first home buyers, owner occupiers and investors, is to simply boost the supply. There's not enough affordable, sustainable houses out there. There are a few things that the government did today which I think are quite good. They really have clamped down on existing investors with existing portfolios, but there is a bit of a green light or a bit of a nudge towards new property for investors now, where if you invest in a new build, you will be exempt from Brightline and potentially you might even be able to deduct interest on it. So I think funneling investors' attention and funds into new builds is clever, because developers who will be looking to develop will be backed by confident investors wanting access to new builds. And that will free up existing dwellings for less competition for first home buyers on existing dwellings. So I think that is clever. I also think that the fund that they set up is a step in the right direction. A lot of the problems we have in developing in New Zealand are related to councils, their inability to produce the right infrastructure and their inability to consent dwellings fast enough. Funding into that is great, it's exactly what we need, but the $3.8 billion that the government has put aside is a rounding error. It's a drop in a very leaky bucket, so it's not enough. The idea is great, that the funding is inadequate.
I just wanted to go back to talking about the restraint on investors, and you said obviously the government is trying to push investors to look towards new builds, but surely there will be some concern that those other restraints that have been made on current investors will impact the rental market, which is a huge problem already. Do you think that there are risks that some of these changes will make it harder for people in rental properties who might see an increase in rent or might see less rental properties on the market?
So just to be clear, the deductibility of interest on existing investment portfolios will continue. They will just be phased out over the next 4 years. So we're not going to wake up next week and investors are suddenly going to want to ramp up rents because they can't deduct interest on their existing portfolio. That's not the case. It'll be phased out over 4 years. On all new purchases after the 27th of March, there will be no interest deductibility for investors on existing properties. So they will have to take that into account when they purchase the property. And either they would assign a lower value to it or they would require a much higher rent. And rents, believe it or not, are driven more by the affordability of the tenants than the willingness of the landlord to bump up rent. So as a landlord, you're more of a price taker, a rent taker, than you are a maker. You have a dwelling, you're trying to rent it out, you get the best price that you can for it, but that price is really driven by the people in that area and what they can afford.
I wanted to talk as well about building more houses and new builds being a focus. Building new houses is not necessarily a quick fix. We've seen last term with the slow progress of KiwiBuild. The government has said that they're going to be building more houses, but how is it going to affect people immediately if it is a longer term issue?
It's a longer term issue that we've been neglecting for decades. So yes, it is a long term issue, but we've neglected it for a long time. So we need to do something about it. And we are doing more than what we were yesterday, but it's not enough. So you're right in saying this needs to be a long-term plan. It needs to be executed over a long period of time. But the only way we can balance the housing market fairly for first home buyers, owner-occupiers and investors is to boost the supply of dwellings. It is the only answer. All of this talk about the demand is only tinkering around the edges. We desperately need to increase supply. So, as you say, that takes time, but just because it takes a long time does not mean we can ignore it or we should walk away from it or it's too hard or it doesn't fall into a 3-year election cycle. We need to address it.
Okay, and finally, earlier this morning, I spoke with Leslie Harris from the First Home Buyers Club, and she said that these policies announced today don't necessarily address the issues first home buyers actually face, such as loopholes surrounding accessing a loan or obtaining a mortgage or when you have credit card debt. What are your thoughts about this?
Look, I think the issue for first home buyers is one where you're trying hard to save for a market which is clearly running away from you right now, and that can be very difficult and very disheartening. And I think it's our role as a society to make sure that ownership is something which is available to those who, you know, are willing and able to save and want to get into that market. And right now it's running away from us. And we know for a fact that the more unaffordable housing becomes, the worse inequality we have in New Zealand. And that's unacceptable. That's not good enough. And we as a older generation haven't done enough to ensure that the housing market is balanced and operating properly for the next generation, and that's not good enough, and sitting here tinkering around at the edges is not good enough. We need to do as much as we can to boost the supply for the next generation. I don't want my son coming into this housing market. He's 8 years old. I would love him to come into a housing market where he can buy an apartment or a townhouse for $500,000. That should not be unreasonable.
That was Jared Kerr, the chief economist at KiwiBank, speaking on the government's new housing announcement aimed at first home buyers. Jared's particular focus was on the particular point was that policy should be focused on supply, not demand. To continue this look into today's housing announcement from the government, I spoke to Leslie Harris, who is the director, who is a director and representative for the First Home Buyers Club. The First Home Buyers Club is an easy to access website where first home buyers can get objective, honest, straightforward advice no matter what stage of the home buying process you're at. Our discussion focused on whether the new policies aimed at first home buyers announced by the government today will effectively mitigate the many hurdles that exist for people who are looking at buying their first home. I began by asking what the biggest hurdles are for first home buyers.
I think it's really around the affordability and the, you know, the tight or tricky banking criteria. So for people to actually get the lending to buy the house, and I sort of spoke a little bit yesterday about this issue and really had hoped that we might have seen something, you know, slightly looking that it might address in part, you know, that's the biggest problem that we've got. But disappointingly, it's just something that's been brushed under the carpet yet again.
Why is it so tricky to work with a bank and get a loan for a first home?
So basically, normally your first home buyers don't have a lot of deposits. So if they're really, really lucky, they might have got, you know, the 20%, you know, basic requirement. So, you know, if you look at on a very, 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 you know, basic kind of house, you know, that is still a significant amount of savings. So let's call it $150,000 or something like that. Obviously, getting that sort of money together is really, really hard, and often we'll see gifting, etc., from, you know, third parties, parents, etc. And unless there's a substantial amount that's been actually saved by the first home buyer, it's not actually counted. So if you look at a situation we recently saw, parents gifted the full deposit. It was four people, very, very strong incomes, if you counted all the four people, but they couldn't get a loan because they couldn't demonstrate that they've actually saved the deposit. So there's all sorts of loopholes like that. There's also, so let's just say, you know, basic house, basic income, you know, averages. So if we look at Auckland as an example, the average income in Auckland's 94,000. So in order to get a, let's just say, $650,000 house, which would be really stretched to even find something like that, you'd need to have saved $140,000 and you'd need to have sort of $120,000 to $130,000 worth of income to service that. So as you can see, straight away we've got this massive big gaping hole, because that would be considered to be, you know, kind of top income level. So we've got this kind of middle income or even kind of high-ish income people, and not to mention the very low income people. It's just, you know, it's housing for the wealthy.
So now you did mention that that wasn't overly addressed within the government announcement this morning. The announcement does include housing measures such as lifting the income caps for buyers, expanding the rules so that more people only need a 5% deposit, and increasing the bright line test. How will these changes make a difference for first home buyers, or will they at all?
So I need to look a little bit further into the 5% deposit and look at what the loopholes are around that, because I guarantee there will be some. In terms of the bright line test, look, I think it's fair to say that the initiatives announced today, then there's going to be things that will slow down the investment side of things. So that's obviously got to be a good thing. But I don't think that's going to solve our problem. I mean, we've had, you know, LVR restrictions and everything put in. It's actually made no difference to the amount of trouble people actually have in getting their mortgage. So my question is more around how does extending the Bright Line test, et cetera, help somebody get the deposit together and get the lending? So it could be said that it will slow down the housing market, so indirectly they're not going to have to keep borrowing more and more and more, but it's not addressing head-on in a really nice, direct, clear way how we can actually assist first home buyers actually possibly be excluded from normal banking criteria. That's what we'd probably like to see, and that might be something that might come out in Reserve Bank announcements. But I understand from the bank's perspective because they need it to be, you know, affordable and serviceable, the mortgages for people, so totally understand that. But we're still in the situation where people cannot get the lending that they need to buy even the most basic of house. And, you know, if we increase the Auckland cap to 700,000, that's still, you know, that's several hundred thousand dollars less than the average house price. So it will probably include a few more people that might be eligible to get the Homestart grant. But that's probably about as far as it goes. It's not going to solve anything. There might just be a few more people, maybe a handful. It might increase from sort of, you know, 5% currently that are kind of eligible to maybe more like 10%. But it's just not good enough. And, it is actually quite weak, and it's quite disappointing in terms of actually from what we can see doing anything really tangible.
So it's not really going to open things up for all these young people that have been told for most of their sort of working lives that they'll never be able to own a house because the house prices are just too expensive, and so there's no hope at the end of the tunnel currently.
Look, we still are seeing people getting into their first home, so I don't want to say there's no hope. I'm just wanting to say it's tough. There's loopholes left, right and centre. There's stuff that people don't understand. Like, if you've got debt, and we've recently surveyed our membership base, and the average debt, now this is student loans aside, is I think it's just over $9,000. So if you take a lending application, $9,000 worth of debt is actually going to reduce what you can borrow by, you know, $40,000. So if you're really tight in terms of finding a house that you can actually afford to buy, well, then actually having, having reductions in terms of what you can borrow because of debt. We just say to people, if you've got a credit card, get rid of it. Because what people don't actually even understand is, let's just say you've got a credit card with a limit of $10,000. And not if, you know, even if you're not using that limit, it still is factored in. It's that $10,000 factored in as debt. Therefore, you're going to be able to borrow $40,000, $50,000 less. So there's a whole pot of difficulties that people face. I'm not saying it's impossible, but we're not seeing anything today that's going to fundamentally change the game, not in my opinion.
Now, you've obviously mentioned these issues and these loopholes. Do you think there's a problem perhaps when it comes to people's education about what it takes to get a home loan and buy your first house?
We're doing the work that we're doing, which is trying to provide all the information in one place, everything you need to know about buying your first home. It's a free service. But, you know, what else is actually available for people to become educated? And education around financials needs to start right back in schools, because getting high purchases and credit cards, I mean, by the time we actually stopped this interview today, I could have applied and got, you know, accepted for 5 credit cards. So people don't understand that getting that really easy money, you know, the long-term impact. So, as I say, it's this incredibly complex, broad set of challenges, and I just find it very, very frustrating being passionate about this area that we just don't get asked the questions. I mean, nobody's asked me, you know, what does it take for somebody to get a mortgage? You know, we're looking at these broader issues like slowing down investors, and on paper it sounds good, but I'd love for somebody to actually ask me some of the questions, because we're at the ground roots actually seeing it. We're not just coming up with the philosophies.
That was Leslie Harris, Director and Representative of the First Home Buyers Club, speaking on the hurdles that exist for people looking to buy their first home and whether the government's announcement today will make a difference to those hurdles.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.